Thanks for flying with us. Jordan here. Just wanted to let everyone know what's happening here at the Star Lores podcast. Star Lores is now on Discord. If you would like to join the Star Lores Cantina Discord server, you can find a link in the description or on any of our social media accounts. Reach out with a DM or email. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter by searching the Star Lores podcast. Go ahead and give our page a like and send us a message. You can also email at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Send us your fan art, Star Wars collections, or fan fictions, and you may even get a feature on one of our pages or even the show. Don't be afraid to offer corrections or add to any of the topics that we discuss on the show. We are also on Patreon, so if you want to help us pay the bills, as well as get a few awesome perks like bonus episodes, access to the private Facebook group, or the VIP section of the Discord server, head on over to patreon.com/StarLores and sign up for as little as $1 a month. And finally, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher app or YouTube, as well as sending us a 5-star review on iTunes. This really helps us reach a wider audience. Enjoy the rest of the show.
You are listening to the Star Lores podcast. I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
I got a bad feeling about this.
The path of true enlightenment runs through the chasm of perfect darkness. The way is narrow and treacherous, but if you can follow it, you will find what you seek. Quote, Ancient Ashla Parable. Lovers in a Dangerous Time.
Binary star systems are not uncommon in the galaxy. Luke Skywalker knew this well, as Tatoo 1 and 2 grace the sky of his homeworld. In orbital mechanics, two objects orbit around each other around a center of mass and space between them. When one object is much larger than the other, this Berry center may appear to be the more massive object. In other orbital systems, wherein there is parity in the mass of objects, the two will orbit around a Bay center, that is for all intents and purposes invisible. Tatoo 1 and 2 are bonded together by forces none can see. Just after the Battle of Endor, Luke visited a star system that made the Tatoo stars look lonely and Spartan. The Soleil system had an astonishing 10 stars. Such systems are not unheard of. Trinary and quaternary systems are fairly common as well, but a decarinary system is a rare sight in the galaxy indeed. Perhaps as rare as a Jedi in 4 ABY. The macrocosm of the galaxy was reflected in the microcosm of Soleil. A brutal civil war was being fought between the world's aristocracy and a group of upstart rebels who wanted a representative democracy. The Soleil rebels contacted the Rebel Alliance, requesting help from the much larger group of freedom fighters. In response, Luke Skywalker, one of the Alliance's most valuable assets, was sent to the world to assist the revolutionaries in their coup. Luke got along well with his new allies, in particular one of their senior commanders, a human female named Mary. Throughout Luke's mission there, the two completed several dangerous missions together. Skywalker found that he enjoyed Mary's company so much that he even considered forsaking the Rebel Alliance to stay with her on Soleil. The two fell in love as they deposed an ostensibly tyrannical monarchy. War doesn't care about love. The Loyalists also called to the wider galaxy for help. The Galactic Empire, licking its wounds after the debacle at Endor, and in need of an easy victory, answered. They dispatched an invasion force to the planet to aid the Loyalists in a counter coup. When Imperial troops stormed the palace, Mary was killed in the firefight. Skywalker blamed himself. He suffered in his grief, and like many Force sensitives caught in a similar situation, he was tempted by the dark side. This was not the only time that flame of Luke's love was smothered by war. A few years prior to meeting Mary, he developed a mutual attraction with the rebel Shira Bri. Then, while flying in the same squadron with her, Luke received a disturbing directive from the Force. Shoot her down. He complied, and believed he had killed her. It would be years before Luke learned why the Force told him to betray his lover in arms. She was a double agent working for Darth Vader. Even this incident was not the first time that death and destruction entered Luke's love life. Prior to the Battle of Hoth, Luke and Han landed the Falcon on the world of Sidekona to make repairs. While there, Luke encountered an old friend of his being attacked by a carnivorous plant in the woods. Tanith Shire and Luke had met earlier, though Luke's duties with the Rebellion prevented them from acting on their mutual attractions. Needless to say, they were thrilled to see each other again. It was exactly what Luke wanted, and that should have made him suspicious. It turned out that the vibrant and youthful Tanith was neither of those things. Luke was experiencing a hallucination induced by incredible telepathic abilities. The woman he met in the forest was an aged near-human, known colloquially as a Mind Witch. These beings have long and indeterminate lifespans, and capture prey using their telepathy. Unlike most creatures, the energy they require for life does not come from digesting plants and animals. They are sustained by the strength of the emotional bond they create with the prey animal. This emotional state can be created by, in effect, reading the prey's mind and learning what they most need out of a romantic relationship. The Mind Witch would then project that image of desire into their prey's mind, and the emotional attachment fed to the witch. In some cases, this energy even seemed to reverse the aging process. Unfortunately for Sybil, Skywalker eventually saw through her illusions. Long story short, the last Mind Witch died from an overdose of lightsaber. In one of the earliest post-Endor battles against the Empire, Luke fought alongside a woman named Gariel Captison. A mutual attraction formed. Towards the end of the fighting, Gariel put an end to the relationship, as she was in love with the world she defended against tyranny, while Luke's duties would take him far from Bakura. Like many people Luke loved, Gariel came to an untimely end, though it would be a few decades. In 10 ABY, Luke had begun the long task of rebuilding the Jedi Order. He visited an ancient Jedi homeworld, Ossus, and met a Force-sensitive woman named Jem Yasanna. He began tutoring her in the ways of the Force, but their attractions for one another could not be quieted with any amount of meditation. Eventually, the two went on an archaeological expedition for long-forgotten Jedi artifacts and teachings. Assassins sent by the reborn Emperor Palpatine cut their educational field trip short, and Jem was killed during the melee. Cupid's calamitous arrow would strike the star-crossed Luke 2 years later. While infiltrating an Imperial battle station, he discovered a sentient consciousness preserved as data on a computer. Luke's unlucky bow this time was a Jedi named Callista Ming. A survivor of the Purge, Callista was eventually slain aboard the battle station, but she used essence transfer to upload her mind into a computer. With Luke's help, she managed to upload her consciousness into a new body. The two stayed and trained together for a time on Yavin 4, but she eventually departed and found work aboard a starship. Although Ming had moved on from the relationship, Luke retained a flame for her. Decades later, she suffered a second dislocation of her consciousness from her body. Abeloth, the beloved queen and murderer extraordinaire, consumed Ming's life essence. When Luke encountered Abeloth, she took on the appearance of Callista. As with the Mind Witch so long ago, she twisted Luke's feelings and attachments against him. When Abeloth was finally destroyed, Callista Ming became one with the Force. Mara Jade was a trained and experienced assassin in the service of Emperor Palpatine during the Galactic Civil War. As part of her employment, she was subjected to an intense and effective psychological conditioning program. Not an ideological or politically active citizen prior to being recruited, the psychological conditioning was as necessary to her role as an Emperor's hand as her physical conditioning and combat training. Although the Empire publicly stood for peace and stability in the galaxy, members of the Emperor's hands were often ordered to do highly immoral things that violated most cultural norms for the rules of war. This required an unquestioning and absolute level of loyalty and devotion to Palpatine. By his death, Mara had proven herself to be the dominant hand. His final order was to kill Luke Skywalker. When she learned of the Last Jedi's role in her beloved master's death, she was all the more enthusiastic to comply. She tracked him to Tatooine and learned of his presence at Jabba's palace. To get close enough to make the kill, she was hired to perform in Jabba's personal dance troupe. Unfortunately, in the chaos of the skirmish at Carcoon, Luke was able to escape. It took years, but in 9 ABY, she got another chance. Due to extenuating circumstances, she was unable to kill him outright and took him captive for an extended period. Over the next few years, fate conspired to have the Force-trained warriors cooperate in several occasions. Eventually, the two had to force meld, a technique that combines the minds of two people. The bond they shared never entirely faded. They fell in love. They married in 19 ABY, just after the end of the Galactic Civil War. Mara and Luke would remain in each other's orbit for the rest of their life.
Although the Nagai invasion of the galaxy was without a doubt an unprovoked and aggressive action, these aggressors were, in effect, refugees. When their civilization had just begun exploring their native Firefist galaxy, they attracted the attention of the Toph Kingdom. This absolute monarchy of large green-skinned humanoids was devoted to expanding and enriching their territory through conquest, looting, and pillaging. They conquered Firefist and subjugated most of its species and civilizations, including the Nagai. The Nagai came to the galaxy far, far away in order to escape the Toph oppression. However, they intended to do this by oppressing the galaxy, filling the power vacuum left by the shattering of the Empire. Dark Lady Lumia, along with a contingent of the Imperial Remnant allied with the Nagai, when Luke first engaged Lumia in combat, she easily defeated him with her unconventional light whip, a weapon he had no idea how to defend against. After this battle, Luke constructed a short blade lightsaber called a Shoto. With this weapon, his non-dominant hand and a standard length blade in his dominant, Luke devised a strategy to combat Lumia's light whip and at the Battle of Saijo at the war's conclusion, defeated her. He unmasked her and was horrified by what he saw. It was the face of Shira Bree, the old flame who he thought he had killed. It may have been preferable if she had died when he shot her down her TIE fighter. Unfortunately for the galaxy in general, and Luke in particular, she survived to fight another day. When the Toph invaded the galaxy during the height of fighting between the Nagai and the Republic, they put aside their differences in order to combat the new threat. Lumia quickly defected to the Toph's and befriended Toph Prince Sereno, intent on subjugating the galaxy, regardless of what sort of villains she had to befriend along the way. In the next handful of years, Luke fought in countless armed conflicts against the forces of Imperial warlords like Zinj and Trioculus and Shadowspawn. In 5.5, he demonstrated an impressive progression in his force capabilities when a ship he was commanding was blown into three pieces and began falling towards the planet. He held the three pieces together with his telekinetic power and was also able to slow the ship's descent so that he and most of the crew survived the crash landing. He also worked in New Republic intelligence alongside Mon Mothma. and was eventually promoted to the rank of general, although he shortly resigned his commission. Following the Black Fleet crisis, a terrorist bombing at the Senate threatened peace in the Republic. Luke investigated the incident and discovered that a dark Jedi named Brakkus and his particular Imperial remnant were behind it. Brakkus, like Luke, intended to train a new generation of Force users. He founded the Shadow Academy, and there trained Darksiders. The Shadow Academy would go on to fight the Republic and the New Jedi Order for several years, before its own pathological leadership destroyed the battle station. New Order.
The Jedi stand in place of gods in the New Republic. They are looked to as surrogate parents, gifted with vast abilities that legend further magnifies beyond all reason. Their purpose is to fight and die for the New Republic's debased, infidel perversions of truth and justice.
Nom Anor. Although Luke's first forays into training new Jedi started in 4 ABY, it would be some time before he committed himself fully to teaching. After the invasion of Bacura, he met a Force-sensitive named Dev Sibwara. This led Luke to believe that enough Force-sensitives survived the Purge to begin a rebirth of the Jedi Order. Luke's next student was an Iskalonian named Kiro. Sibwara had already been killed in action, however, and Luke questioned his ability to effectively teach. He was cognizant of the many well-intentioned Jedi throughout history who fell to the dark side, and was concerned that his students would take the same path as Darth's Vader or Revan, and he would thus be in part responsible for their crimes. Kiro joined the rebellion during the Nagai Toph War, and fought alongside Skywalker and others in a number of skirmishes, eventually becoming a soldier of some distinction. Luke came to appreciate the Chaikvi's natural talents and moral integrity. He was convinced and officially accepted Kiro as his first apprentice. During this time, Luke began to hone his skills as a teacher by training a number of rebel recruits as a kind of Jedi-inspired commando, although Kiro was the only being among them with any Force aptitude. When Iskallon became a theater for heavy fighting, however, Kiro terminated his training in order to lead the war effort there. Over the next few years, Luke focused less on training others and more on honing his Jedi skills to an unparalleled degree. The Force ghost of Obi-Wan also appeared to aid Luke in his development on a number of occasions. In 9 ABY, Kenobi visited Luke for the last time until a brief moment when his son was born. Luke did spend some time training his sister, Leia Organa Solo. He learned a number of additional impressive Force powers, expanded his lightsaber repertoire, and learned much of the ways of the old Jedi Order. By 10 ABY, he could single-handedly destroy an AT-AT with the Force, and had defeated more Sith Lords than just Vader. He also learned something of the dark side during this time. He studied briefly under the Dark Jedi Joris Kibayoth, and later under Palpatine Reborn. In the latter case, he succumbed completely to the dark side. By 11 ABY, Luke had removed the taint of the dark side with the aid of Leia after requesting permission from New Republic officials. He founded the New Jedi Order. This represented the first major difference between the new and the old Jedi Order. In Luke's, the Jedi were much more explicitly a part of the Republic, whereas in previous generations, Jedi protected the Republic, but were also quite independent from it. The Order was first headquartered at Yavin 4 and had an initial student body of 12 disciples. The main campus was centered in the Great Temple, the former nerve center of the Rebel Alliance. Although Luke was the first, and for a time only teacher, at what was eventually called the Jedi Praxium, he soon trained and discovered new Jedi to assume teaching duties. Mara Jade, Kyle Katarn, and Cam Solisar all became central instructors for the new generations of Jedi Knights. Eventually, new Praxiums were founded on Dantooine, Ossus, Arcania, and Teia IV. The new Jedi Order was closer in its policies to the Jedi before the Great Sith War. Apprentices could be trained at virtually any age, and Jedi were also permitted to marry, raise families, and find employment outside the Order. Individual Jedi were also given far more latitude in how they carried out their duties to the Republic and the galaxy. Their equipment and weapons were also more diverse, with many Jedi donning battle armor and using conventional weapons like blasters and explosives. Although many Jedi still preferred robes, these were much less standardized than they were during the old Jedi Order's final days. Jedi were also encouraged to express themselves more through the construction of their lightsaber. In days past, an apprentice usually designed their first lightsaber in part on their masters. The new Jedi would incorporate design elements from their homeworlds and personal mementos like rancor teeth or speeder bike throttles in the hilt of their lightsaber. Additionally, the supply chain for lightsaber crystals across the galaxy had been completely destroyed or lost after the Great Purge. This meant that the new Jedi Order had to travel far and wide in search of new sources of crystals, resulting in a greater diversity of crystal types and thus lightsaber blade color. Many of the Jedi martial arts were lost, and so a new style of lightsaber combat was developed. The seven styles of lightsaber forms were reduced to three and contained elements of ancient teaching as well as new insights from saber savants like Luke, Kyle Katarn, and Cam.
Errant Ventures.
Unfortunately, Luke's early anxieties about his students falling to the dark side would come true during the early days of the Order. Given the first Praxium's proximity to dark side nexuses and the Force ghosts of ancient Sith lords haunting Yavin 4, it is unsurprising that some of his students were unable to resist temptation. Among the Praxium's early student body, Desan, Kyle Katarn, and Rosh Pennin all fell to the dark side. Each of these prodigal children had varying degrees of atrocity attached to their falls. An apprentice named Kip Duron was corrupted by the ghost of a Sith Lord, Exar Kun, a process which culminated in the horrifying destruction of an entire nebula and the seven star systems inside of it. By 25 ABY, the Order had gone through many growing pains and emerged the better for it. They aided the Republic and innocent civilians in many armed conflicts and existential threats to peace and stability. There were more than 100 fully trained Jedi Knights in the galaxy, and they seemed to be doing a fairly good job of defending the Republic and protecting the innocent. When the Yuuzhan Vong invaded, half the Jedi were killed. Vong propaganda efforts also effectively turned public opinion against the Jedi. Bounty hunters started targeting Jedi, and they became the victim of an extermination campaign by the Vong. After the war, the Jedi Order quickly recovered. By 40 ABY, there were over 1,000 Jedi.
Grand Master.
Impressive. Most impressive.
The skill in the Force, piloting, lightsaber dueling, and indeed, all the combative arts that Luke possessed were perhaps unparalleled in galactic history. The first indication of this massive reservoir of potential was realized in Luke's first duel with his father, Darth Vader. Although he was an experienced combat veteran by that time in the war, he had relatively little formal training with a lightsaber or the Force. Obi-Wan gave him a few lessons before dying, and Yoda taught him for a few weeks. In comparison, Jedis like Anakin Skywalker had a lifetime of training from masters by the time they were Luke's age. Add to this the fact that Vader was possibly the most powerful Force user to ever exist, whose strength and stamina were greatly bolstered by his cybernetics. And betting on Luke in the gambling pits of Nar Shaddaa would have earned tremendous winnings. The fact that he not only survived the duel at Bespin and scored hits, and even gained the upper hand a few times was nothing short of miraculous. At their second duel, only a few months later, Luke won a decisive victory. To put an even finer point on the achievement, he utilized Vader's own preferred lightsaber form, 5, and defeated the cyborg warrior with a relentless flurry of brute force lightsaber chops. Luke learned much of the ways of the Jedi in the months following the Bespin duel. He trained extensively at Obi-Wan Kenobi's old house on Tatooine. There he discovered Kenobi's journals and learned how to construct a lightsaber, as well as improved his connection to the Force through intensive meditation. This habit of self-directed learning would aid Skywalker tremendously in his Jedi journey. Luke was particularly gifted in telepathic and telekinetic applications of the Force. Though he was perhaps overconfident with beings like Jabba the Hutt, his ability to manipulate the will of others was high. Luke shared a close telepathic bond with Leia, and the two could often tell when the other was in danger through the Force. In general, the greater the disparity between the nervous systems of Force users, the more difficult it is to establish a telepathic link. Despite this, Luke was able to send a psychic message across the galaxy to every living Jedi who represented a highly diverse sample of nervous systems. When the Jedi answered his call and gathered on Ossus, he declared himself Grand Master of the new Jedi Order. This interspecies telepathy would only improve, and he was eventually able to establish communication with a crystalline species with a very exotic biology. His telekinesis grew to near deific levels during the Yuuzhan Vong War. At one point, he was able to sustain a black hole and also use the Force to throw Davin vassals into it. He could easily protect himself from extreme environmental conditions, such as walking over flowing lava without being burned to a crisp or succumbing to noxious fumes. His manipulation of physical reality was perhaps at its peak when through the Force he generated a physical copy of his ship, the Jade Shadow, that was able to lure attacking dart ships away. He was punished for breaking the laws of physics with a temporarily shriveled, aged, and desiccated face. In the Shadow of Jade.
The tragedy of Darth Cadus was one of the greatest failures of the New Jedi Order in both the court of public opinion and government opinion. Cadus eventually slew Mara Jade, leaving Luke a widower and his son, Ben, motherless. This event resulted in heavy surveillance of Jedi by the Galactic Alliance, schisms within the Order, as well as Luke's exile from the Republic and the Jedi as punishment for his role in training Darth Cadus. When Luke was exiled, Ben insisted on aiding his father. Father and son departed the Core Worlds aboard Jade Shadow, searching for the cause of Darth Cadus's fall. In a dark echo of the Jedi Civil War from 5 millennia prior, they retraced the steps of a great Jedi turned Sith to the furthest corners of the galaxy, learning the dark secrets that led to his conversion. They both learned exotic force powers, such as the ability to generate blasts of golden flames. It was in using this ability that Luke discovered perhaps the most ancient and forgotten secret of the Force, largely ignored after the Jedi reformed as the Jedi Order. The Force is composed of equally of the dark and light side. The continual struggle between them is a necessary function of life. With this revelation, Luke perhaps finally achieved his destiny as the Chosen One and brought balance to the Force. Both Ben and Luke learned much of the Force from different orders of Force users and ancient holocrons, eventually finding the source in Darth Cadus's fall, Abeloth. Luke was eventually reinstated as Grand Master, but did not resume his duties until defeating the dark side being. During the final confrontation, Luke used a rare ability called Oneness, in which every cell in a being's body is infused with light side energy, and their skin begins to emit a golden glow. To further underscore Luke's matchless combat prowess, he killed the godlike Abeloth, not with a lightsaber or superweapon, but with a crushing elbow to the head.
Beyond Shadows. Like all mortal beings, Grandmaster Luke Skywalker eventually died, although the date and cause is unknown. His legacy lived on in both the New Jedi Order, which survived and thrived for at least a century after he found it, and in his heroic descendants like Cole and Cade Skywalker. As many Jedi throughout history have demonstrated, death is something of an ambiguous state of being. Luke would mentor Cade as a Force ghost through the most difficult time in his life. Luke's apparition appeared as he did circa 45 ABY. Since many Force ghosts appear as they did at their time of death, it could be the case that he died within a few years of defeating Abeloth. In any event, when Cade Skywalker was healed of his addiction and accepted his destiny as a Jedi Knight, Luke stopped contacting him. Cade's memory held the last known image of Luke Skywalker. And now, an ad from our sponsors.
Need a spot to relax between shipping routes while visiting Tatooine? Come on down to Chalmers Cantina on 3112 Outer Kerner Way, Mos Eisley. Your local hive of scum and villainy, den of miscreants and misdeeds, or local tavern of patrons and entertainment? Try any of our signature drinks. Blue Milk, Tatooine Sunset, Jawa Juice, Yetuni Basca, Tatooni Junko, and Hutt's Delight. Enjoy the sounds of our own in-house band, the Modal Notes, and the Giz Whalers. No droids allowed. Chalmers is not responsible for death or dismemberment caused by other patrons. Drink at your own risk. Don't drink and fly. Welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon. I'm Sam.
This is Christian.
Hey, this is Jordan.
All right, so we just got done having some nice micro-brewed blue milk at Chalmers, and now we're back on the Falcon.
Where it's safe.
Talk and shop, exactly, where we get to keep all our limbs where they are. Thank you very much. Yeah, so the biggest interesting trope about Luke's general arc that we see of him past the films, how his character develops, for me is the obvious Christ parallels.
Yeah,
and I don't think like there was a directive that came down that let's make him look really
space
Christ-like,
Jesus
look like space Jesus. I think it's just the independent writers each just had their own little like nod to sort of ancient religious figures of myth like Jesus and that kind of thing, using these special abilities. For example, walking on water, Luke walked on lava, right? That's kind of...
I remember reading that verse.
Yeah. It's the space version of Jesus. His the first Jedis to join the new Jedi Order, he had
12.
A student body of 12.
Yeah.
And that's like, that was for sure on purpose, I think. And then, of course, the whole idea of the new Jedi Order kind of has similarities to the messianic idea of Jesus sort of coming to fulfill this ancient religion's kind of promise to the world, which was Judaism, right? But then Christianity obviously had a lot in common with Judaism, but was different in some significant ways. And the new Jedi Order and the old Jedi Order were also kind of like that. He made those.
Yeah, and that nexus is Luke, like Jesus is with.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, his religion that he founded grew exponentially long after his death. He became a figure of myth, like our friend and philosopher Nam Anor said, the people sort of event of the galaxy eventually became to view some Jedi like Luke as gods, like literally. So it's kind of that same mythical trajectory. Also, another Christ comparison. This is a very loose one. I gotta believe there's some point in Skywalker's life where he used force healing on somebody other than himself. He used it on himself a couple of times, but I couldn't find a specific reference for him using force heal on other people. It's the same ability we know from video game canon, at least, that if in KOTOR, for example, if your character has the force heal ability, he can heal
others
else
as well. Yeah.
So it's a pretty
standard
thing.
It's not a
huge
leap in logic. No.
Yeah, it's not a huge leap in logic to imagine that.
So same in Jedi Academy, like, or Jedi Knight. Basically any game where you can play someone with force powers, they include the heal ability.
Yeah, but can you heal anybody else in the Jedi Knight games?
Not that I recall, but...
Yeah, I can't remember either if... But there's not.
Well, there's not a lot of.
Maybe you can in online, actually. That
maybe
might have been a thing.
A teammate.
Yeah,
maybe.
I think you could in Jedi Knight 2, which had a much better online culture. But that's a whole
other discussion.
That's a new episode. Just the online gaming of Jedi Knight 2, circa 2001 to 2003.
Very specific. We're gonna dig up old message boards and
exactly.
Do a deep dive.
And then there's also sort of a resurrection after his death with Cade Skywalker. He comes back as a Force ghost, right? And then sort of imparts wisdom on this sort of new follower who's then really going to take the Jedi into the next generation. Although Cade doesn't really appear to really do that part because he just goes back to being a scoundrel on aboard the Minock with all his friends. And then he also, obviously this is a matter of some debate. And I don't think it this is really a true thing about the historical Jesus, the Mary Magdalene romance, right? And then one of Luke's early girlfriends was named Mary. That's an easy thing that could have been totally accidental. I don't know if
or even just a vague allusion to like Greco-biblical names, Luke, Mary.
Precisely. That actually makes a lot of sense. Luke was a disciple of Jesus as well.
Has his own book.
Didn't even think about that one. But then there's other religious elements that we've obviously talked about a bunch during our Force episodes, and particularly within Buddhism, like Christianity and Catholicism in particular has like saints. And then in Buddhism, they have a very similar idea called bodhisattvas, and they're basically just saints. They're these teachers and prophets or whatever of that religion who did a bunch of great mythical deeds. They have their own miracles and stuff. And one of them in particular, I can't remember if it was Gautama Buddha or another bodhisattva, but when they sort of achieved nirvana and oneness, their skin started to glow golden like Luke Skywalker's did when he attained that oneness. And then the time when he attained that oneness was also very timed with where it occurs sort of in Buddhist mythology, because that's basically the end of Luke's story as we know it. Like, that's when he defeats Abeloth. And I think that's one of the very latest chronology stories that Luke's is involved in. And then, of course, he comes back in Legacy 100 years later.
Yeah. Another interesting Dragon Ball Z.
Dragon Ball Z, yeah. Yes.
Super Saiyan mode. Yeah. That's the ascending to newer planes.
Although, I think there was like Super Saiyan 6 or something when you actually also started to glow. But
yeah.
Oh, Super Saiyans. That I was actually thinking about Dragon Ball Z in this, because with Luke just keeps getting more and more insanely powerful as the story goes on.
Yeah, I don't know if I love this, like how they represent Luke and his abilities. You know, there are some, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I remember reading about some Jedis that could, they could collapse entire galaxies with the Force, and they could create black holes with the Force and stuff like that. And I feel like that gets a little beyond the scope of George Lucas's visions for what the Force is supposed to be.
I think it's just a writing thing that you get into when you have to just keep cranking out content, right?
I think that's part of it.
There's just nowhere else you can go.
Hollywood movies, and like Fast and Furious is a perfect example of that. It's a power creep, essentially. And
Dragon Ball Z is a perfect example of that, because they get totally ridiculous by the end of the Dragon Ball Z.
I definitely think Super Saiyan Luke when I think about, the
enlightened Luke.
Him being able, to like pull a destroyed ship together and crash land it on a planet, right? Or keep a black hole open,
To be fair, I had the same problem with the Force Unleashed games. I love those games, but I feel like the Force power creep is very prominent there too.
Yeah, and the one thing I kind of like maybe about the movie depiction of the Force is it's not like, it's not like a Harry Potter magic where like it can just
do what the plot needs you to do.
Yeah, literally anything there, you can just make that. Like the Force seems to be a little more limited, at least in the movies. And I like that because I don't know, there's some, like later on in the writing, how can we really say Darth Vader was the most powerful Force user? In some of the books, it's just like absurd amounts of power, And he even like someone like Darth Nihilus or something.
Well, actually, Darth Vader's power was severely hampered by the suit on purpose.
Yes.
So he actually
could have been.
He never really got to the place where he should have been.
Yeah. And that is a fair point. But I like the character of Darth Nihilus as well. But that is almost a bit of a better explanation, because it like cost him something to have that type of power, right? It's not like he's just upgrading all the time.
Yeah, and I'll add on to that as well. In some of the KOTOR novels, they really get into this sort of the mechanics of what guys like Darth Nihilus specifically were doing in terms of these like crazy, like, millennia-long Sith magical rituals, and they had, like, these insane drug systems hooked up to them for, like, years while they're going into this just, like, satanic hate meditation. And, and then, like, Darth Vitiate, I believe, he's, like, he sort of explains to another person who he makes immortal and godlike, like him. The other guy's, like, every cell in his entire body just feels like it's on fire. Like, it's just, life is just constant pain and suffering when you're in that state.
Right.
And he asks Vitiate about it, and he's like, you won't get used to it, but you'll figure out how to function with it.
Yeah.
And so it's like, there's a huge cost to that, at least. And then we see the mechanics of, it's a very complex thing that's happening.
Right. Yeah. And like, even sort of Nihilus more or less consumed himself, you know, there's sort of this huge cost that he has to pay. It's not just he can, you know, get an upgrade every few years and all of a sudden have these crazy abilities. But I think that's my only gripe with some of these sort of legends interpretations of the Force.
I do think on the one hand, you're right at like the individual story level. But when you zoom out and look at what George Lucas was going for in terms of writing Star Wars, of he wanted to write a religious myth of the future, right? And then this ends up looking very much like our religious myths. And so I think on that level, but you can only really appreciate that allusion to religious literature when you zoom out and look at
big picture.
We glossed over like 200 novels in this episode, and it just looks a little bit silly when you actually zoom in and look at what Luke's doing individually.
Yeah.
But if you collapse it all down, it's like, this is very much like, this looks like a religious text from a hyper advanced society who has galaxy spanning capabilities, right?
Yeah. No, I can agree with that view for sure. And so one of the big differences between Luke's new Jedi Order and the old Order, but is also a resurrection of older principles, which Jedi were allowed to use, is love and marriage.
And also the age at which apprentices can be accepted, because adults in the pre-Great Sith Wars could join
at any time
for the first time.
Yeah, and we all know that Anakin almost got rejected because he was, quote-unquote, too old.
As a nine-year-old,
exactly. Yeah. So the biggest thing surrounding this kind of discussion is the idea of attachment and why Luke suddenly made it permissible. And arguably, the whole reason for Anakin's fall to the dark side was his attachment for Padme and his unwillingness to let go of that relationship, having to keep that relationship hidden so he didn't go to the proper people for help regarding his visions and things like that. Like, it's such a big linchpin in the fall of Anakin Skywalker, the Chosen One, that for Luke to just kind of flip his directive on marriage so blatantly and easily and have his string of potential lovers, even, that he is quite the playboy, some would argue even greater than Han Solo, which is an interesting take.
Yes, I only covered his girlfriends who died.
I do kind of wonder, though, if...
Not all the others who rejected him.
I wonder, though, if, like, old Jedi from the old order were to see this new order, if they would look at it as, like, apostasy, you know, like... Almost like an offshoot of like Mormonism is to evangelicalism, you know?
I can answer this because actually there is a old Jedi master who survived. His name was Master Kukruk. And he survived the Great Purge, obviously.
Yeah.
And then he actually joined the New Jedi Order later and then eventually became a Grand Master of the New Jedi Order.
I love that guy. He's got a really cool arc because
he does.
Crosses so many like significant historical events because he's so long-lived.
But he didn't seem to have a problem with the reforms. Yeah. He thought they were pretty legit.
Yeah, so the thing is about that is a lot of times the old Jedi Order, not the old Jedi Order, the mid Jedi Order, the Clone Wars Jedi Order, is often seen as being, what's the word I'm looking for?
Corrupt.
Not maybe corrupt so much as like so...
Like institutional.
Arrogant. Yeah, and arrogant and institutionalized and drifting away from their core foundational teachings.
They're in an ivory tower.
Yeah,
right?
And this causes them to obviously be blind to the dark side and all these... There's a whole episode we can talk about the flaws of the Jedi Order. And this is Luke kind of repairing those things. And had the Jedi Order not been so arrogant, Anakin wouldn't have fallen. So in a lot of ways, it's not strictly Anakin's fault because of his relationship, but it's the way that the whole situation was handled. Also, I do agree with Anakin's line about Jedi being encouraged to love, even though it's coming from a very greedy point when he says it. Yeah. It's not untrue that there might be a way to not necessarily let bonds of attachment control your life, but to be kind of open-palmed with them.
Yeah.
Being like an ultimate expression of sacrifice. And that's what makes it okay for a Force user to have a relationship with another Force user, or anyone really, is having that like open-ended attachment, not strict attachment, right? So it doesn't necessarily mean they have to become reclusive and monastic and priest-like. They can openly love everyone and even have a lover as well.
Yeah.
But also be free to release that to the Force and, you know, their eventual inevitable death, as long as it doesn't control you.
But then it's funny how, you know, Luke makes that point and that reform to allow Jedis to be sort of a little bit more human or sentient, I guess. but I don't want to be speciesist here. But then Luke himself, when Mary died, for example, he was tempted by the dark side. He eventually fell to the dark side. A bunch of his students fell to the dark side. And pretty much at the center of most of their falls and temptations, I think,
is the relationships.
It's attachment relationships. It's their families in danger. It's all of these kinds of things.
It's not to say there isn't a risk there, but it's to say that there could be a right way of doing it.
Yeah. I think with Kip Duron blowing up 7 star systems, it's a little bit more than a risk. And with Darth Cadus doing everything he did.
The same argument, though, applies to, like, even by virtue of entertaining Force abilities, you have the potential of creating mass murderers, because that seems to be a pretty
I agree. Frequent... I think we need those robots from the X-Men movies to come to and the clean Star up. Wars universe and get
maybe,
rid of all
maybe
the
Jedi. Maybe the Galactic Republic should do some kind of program where they extract midichlorians from people's bloodstreams and make it impossible for them to use.
We won't use the term cleansing, but
but then they
it's
just
sort of like a forced sterilization. Okay, call it that.
But then they just take those midichlorians and make adreno midichloriachrome and give it to all their politicians and make them have superpowers.
Exactly.
I don't like where this is going.
I like it. That would be such an interesting story
plot.
Arc. Yeah, just like
The bad guy aren't the Sith. The bad guy was the normal people all along.
Well, not necessarily. Just using that premise of like forced sterilization. You know,
they do use it.
There's an animal called the Issa Lemiri who suppresses Force powers, and so when they sort of discover that, they sort of use used heavily as
weaponized.
It's like the kryptonite sort of the Star Wars universe is Issa Lemiri.
They also even in KOTOR 2, where they strip someone of their Force abilities, a very heavy.
Mitra stripped herself.
Okay,
actually,
okay. If you want to get specific, yes.
Yeah.
But that it comes up as a theme. Yeah. So, but it would be a cool arc to exclusively zero in on that as like being.
But more as like, I guess I'm thinking like a scientific process where it's, you know, you're like force it. It'd
They're
be
like
a little.
Trying to breed force sensitivity out of the population.
What's that?
They're trying to like breed force sensitivity out of the population or something.
Yeah.
The Yazong Vong also kind of reflect ideas along those lines.
They were not into people using the Force.
They probably would have done that had they won the war.
They had it. Yeah, exactly. And they had it stripped from them too. So
explicitly trying to do that during the war. Yeah.
Again, we're not going to use the word cleansing, but
it's more like a deep clean.
And on that note,
may the Force be with you.